I call it conspiracy theory. I'm a conspiracy theorist. So, I mean.
Oh, really? So have you, speaking of conspiracy theories.
Let's start there.
My wife, yeah. So welcome to the Conspiracy Theory Podcast, Catholic Conspiracy.
Yeah.
Maybe you start us off with what you were going to say.
I was going to say on the way over here, I was thinking about, you know, I'm a worship leader, and how does being a songwriter and a worship leader sort of connect lots of different pieces of the church together? Mm. Because mm-hmm. I primarily work in Protestant churches.
Mm. Hey, before we jump into Protestant churches.
Yes.
Danielle Noonan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Cheers.
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 Everyone.
Cheers. This is some of the best Cross. Water I've ever had.
Yeah, yeah. Good. So we can minimize the editing if we just roll with it.
That's
so
right.
We have Danielle with us today. We're super excited about having
Thanks
you on the podcast.
For coming.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
You are a worship leader at a Protestant church?
Yeah, I sure am. So I lead worship at Sienna Ranch Baptist. Mm. A few different places sort of around town. And then I use my other weekends for conferences or retreats or,
yeah, you're
travel.
Sort of Catholic famous. You're like,
I guess I don't even know.
Anyways.
I don't even know. I'm just old. And when
the inertia of a career,
yes,
forward,
that's
yeah.
right. Yeah. Exactly. But no, seriously, I was thinking on the way over here, how does worship and songwriting connect all the pieces, because I feel like I was sort of raised as an apologist in East Texas as a little kid, you know.
Me too.
And everything is so divided and ununified socioeconomically and with race and with religion, and I was continually trying to prove I really do love Jesus. You know, I am a Christian.
Yeah.
You know?
I know exactly.
And some people don't have that experience, which was shocking to me.
Mm.
Like, my husband does not have that experience.
What experience?
The experience of people questioning his Catholic faith.
You grew up Catholic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, youngest of 14, big Catholic family in East Texas.
And, like, super Baptist East Texas. I grew up in Southeast Texas, so it was like, you know, the Pine Curtain is just, like, thick with Baptists. Like,
yes.
People and culture and you know.
Yeah. And I loved them. It's like I've always loved people, you know? So as I started to write songs, and I always found that worship was like the intersect where it intersected, you know, everyone's politics and everyone's religion and everyone's family. It just like cut right through because it was of God and it was for God. And there was no like wishy-washy, like, oh, well, the Holy Spirit doesn't lie here and it doesn't lie here. But, you know, there was no question about it. And so that felt very, I guess, comforting to me. So as I was thinking about that on the way over here, you were talking about like about dicey waters. I've always sort of felt like the current of, almost of like changing of seasons and societal like pushbacks and things. And I think those can either make you super, super complacent or they can make you very, very passionate.
Yeah.
And I ended up being very passionate, about a lot of things. Sometimes in a really good way and sometimes in a really, really bad way, but worship became this, intersect of everything, because I could sit with a Catholic, or actually it's actually harder to sit with Catholics and talk about worship than it is with my Protestant brothers and sisters.
Now, when you say worship, you mean like specifically praise and worship.
Mm-hmm.
Putting terms to this.
Yes.
And
that was so strange for me. I almost felt like, you know,
why do you think that is?
I think people Catholics are very comfortable with the liturgy of the word, the liturgy of the Eucharist, and having everything be very laid out and not spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a very charismatic, spontaneous person. It's where I feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
it's very clear that's your calling. Like,
yeah. That sort of thing. I'm definitely doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And my struggle was the obedience part. Mm.
Like, give me a for instance.
For instance, when I had little babies, I knew I was supposed to be doing music. Mm-hmm. I knew I was supposed to be writing music. I needed to be surrounded with people who could mentor me and love on me in a way that would sort of fertilize my gift.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just couldn't do it. I could not bring myself to do it because I knew that I would be almost ridiculed in a way by you know, my 75-year-old mother saying, why are you doing this? What is this? Why would you go to someone who isn't Catholic to grow in your gift? Or there just wasn't, I couldn't grasp at anything that made any sense, even though he was asking me to be obedient.
So it wasn't so much that you were being called by God to the life of an artist, but it was specifically the non-Catholic community that was part of the friction. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's really where my heart is.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways. Because once you sort of sit with people who aren't Catholic or aren't even Christian or aren't white or aren't anything like you, and you just shut up for a little bit, you start to, God really plants seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to understand a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you start to have this expansion of growth and knowledge. And I think that's sort of how God blesses you in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think I wasn't willing to shut up.
Yeah.
In a lot of, you know.
Yeah. We're going to do a little, like, 5-minute lightning round. I have some fun questions for you to ask.
Oh, bring it.
Yeah. So who is the best musician ever? Full stop.
Oh, gosh. Ever?
Ever. Best musician ever.
Oh, my gosh.
5 seconds.
Oh, gosh. 5 seconds? Bono.
Bono. So token.
You've now been judged.
I know. I can feel it. I'm starting to sweat.
Okay. What's the strangest thing your kids have ever said?
Strangest?
Yeah.
Funniest.
Or most recent.
Henry or thing. James said one day, this was at 7 a.m, mind you, and I had not had coffee. If there were no tomorrow, would there be a yesterday? Or if there was a today, would there be a tomorrow? I don't know. He said something like that, and I can't even remember because my brain was so like foggy, anti-brain. And he, yeah, some sort of like profound. And I just said, I haven't had coffee yet.
If there were no yesterday, would there be coffee today?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
If you could put anything on a billboard and put it anywhere in the world, what would it say and where would you put it?
I would put it right in front of my house and it would say, stop talking and listen more.
Oh, and listen more. That's good. That's good. Why?
I just, because you have to start, I don't know, if you want change to happen, you have to kind of start with yourself.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. If you could be any person in any movie, who would you be?
Oh, that's easy. I'd be Dolly Parton in,
oh my gosh.
In Steel Magnolias. 100%. That was easy.
Favorite book.
That was fast.
Favorite book?
Favorite book.
Pride and Prejudice.
Okay. Favorite podcast? Do you listen to podcasts frequently enough for this to be a relevant question?
No, I don't. I wish I did, but I would have to say, I mean, hello. Hey. These guys right here in front of me.
If you have, last question, if you have a day to yourself, for whatever reason, full day, what do you do to fill your time?
I work outside.
Like on the farm?
On the farm, yeah.
Nice.
It's my joy.
Get dirt between your fingers and...
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Hurt myself, usually.
Excellent.
It usually ends with a wound of some sort.
So... Let's talk about a little bit your life as a singer-songwriter and, you know, Paper Castle and whatever else is involved in that, and kind of how, I mean, I think for me, one of the main interests in your professional experience is your, you know, relationship to the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. and your experience in leading music in a liturgical setting, and now doing something that is, from my understanding, very non-liturgical,
mm-hmm.
and kind of what you learned from both of those experiences and how you see what, like, you know, either one can learn from the other and kind of mining that. Because you have this really, I think, unique experience in both. So.
Yeah. Like you said, I started leading music in Catholic Church when I was like 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was really young. I'd like begged my parents for guitar. I wanted to be Sheryl Crow so bad.
It's not a bad
dream. Yeah.
Bad dream
or like Natalie Maines, like Dixie Chicks, Wide Open Spaces. I wanted to be the girl with the guitar, and they were like, no, here, you're gonna lead music for mass. I was like, what? But even being like 13, 14 in high school, I could tell that there was something very, very special and unique about having the, like, being musically inclined.
Mm-hmm.
Because before, we didn't really have music at Mass because there was no one to do it.
Yeah.
It was a little town in East Texas, and it was a little mission parish, and...
What diocese was it?
Tyler.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it was just tiny, and we started to have Mass at our house, and then we moved to the gym and the middle school, and then we were at a funeral home for a while,
mm-hmm.
which is very, very weird.
Mm. But, wow.
But there was a need, and my parents fulfilled that need in a big way, I think, just for... which is something that I always have appreciated. And now looking back, I think like, gosh, like what a honor it was to be able to, you know, to do music, at such a young age and have the responsibility to, lead music at Mass and begin to understand, okay, what does all of this mean put together? You know, what does the Eucharist mean? And the importance of that. And so I've never really lost that, like, belief in who God is in the Eucharist and the importance of Mass and going to Mass and experiencing, you know.
So you just had the faith from the age of child. You just, like, believed from the beginning.
Yeah, and I was talking about this with one of my girlfriends because, have you ever read Interior Freedom? Jacques Philippe's? Wrote a book about how
I just saw it today on the list of recommended readings.
There's something inside of you that, you know, no one can take away.
Yeah.
I can't pinpoint when I realized that, because I was very, very rebellious as a kid. Super rebellious. Which is funny because the church has so many rules and boundaries,
mm-hmm.
that I liked rules and boundaries, but if I didn't believe in it, it was just like, screw you. Like, I'm not doing this.
Mm.
And so I thought about like, what was it that, or I was trying to pinpoint, okay, when was the time that I realized that's like something that no one can take away? Like my faith and my love for Christ and my desire to like ask lots of questions,
mm-hmm.
and doubt a little bit and then and always like, see, that's just like something no one can take away.
Yeah.
That's like the path of the East Texas seeker. It's like, there's so much, there's so little like proportionally Catholicism in that part of Texas
mm-hmm.
that like, I remember growing up and like, I had the same sort of like, I was always asking questions, but I think it was because the lunchroom was 5% Catholic, 95% Baptist.
Yeah.
And lunches were sort of talks about, like that was the, right.
yeah,
just me, I don't know, but like that was the, no, yeah, the lunchtime yeah. discussions.
I mean, my experience wasn't that different. I mean, growing up here in the Houston area, I also sat, but in my case, it was not only other Christians, but it was like Muslims and other people, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what the lunch conversation always was. And in fact, for me, it's funny to say, but like for a while growing up in high school, I almost identified more with non-Catholics than with Catholics.
Mm.
And it was always weird to me.
Hmm.
And it was mainly because other Christians seemed to be actually into their faith. Whereas a lot of Catholics were just like, yeah, well, you know, I go to confirmation class because that's what you do.
Right.
But there wasn't the same fire that you saw in other Christians. And so in some ways, I ended up gravitating more towards that. And yet I never once thought about leaving the Catholic Church. It was just like what I saw in them, I wanted, but for me and my faith.
Yeah.
Strangely enough.
Yeah. You
know, it's almost like God was using them to inspire faith in me.
Yeah.
Which is
interesting. And I think that is exactly what God does.
So you talked about how when you were younger, you were leading Catholic worship right, in the liturgy as a very young child. And you did that for most of your life. When did you, let's say, how long ago did you start this new job? A couple months ago?
Oh, yeah. It's very recently. But when I started doing full-time ministry probably 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm.
And I've always just had a lot of Protestant friends.
Yeah.
Me
too. They're my faves.
And so it was just this sort of natural progression of someone needing a worship leader or someone, you know, calling me in, and then sort of lots of doors opening for me professionally. And I never really thought about it because I never sort of questioned, should I be doing this? What's the mission behind this? You know, it just sort of happened. And it would be funny for people to be like, oh, what's your home church? I'd be like, oh, you know, St. Angela's or St. Lawrence, or they'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
And then I would catch myself being like, oh gosh.
Yeah, you're like, here's your rosary. See you later. Right. Bye.
Yeah.
They'd be like, oh, that's so cool. Like, tell me more about that. And they had this openness to understanding, okay, well, what's my story?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's my story? Why am I here? What got me here?
Do you find yourself talking about your, like, your sort of Catholicism a lot in this new church?
Not really.
No.
Not particularly. We talk a lot about beauty, honestly, and about the responsibility of Christian people to do what they're supposed to be doing, not within the church, but like outside the church, specifically when it comes to virtue, when it comes to beauty, when it comes to looking inward and understanding who you are as a person, as a creator, as an artist.
Let's talk for a second, pivot about music and prayer. So in the Mass, let's say we go back like 150 years, everything in Mass was sung.
Mm-hmm.
Like it would almost be tautological to say, like, is it a sung Mass or not a sung Mass?
Yeah.
And in Vatican II documents, they say it's permitted to not sing some parts of the Mass, which doesn't make sense because there are lots of stuff we don't sing.
Right.
There's like the text doesn't make sense because if you didn't live in like the 1700s, you wouldn't understand that everything is not always sung at all times.
Yeah.
So we have this, you know, praise and worship, which is something that exists outside of the Mass, let's say. Mm-hmm. And in the Mass, we have like polyphony and chant and other things. Like we said, you have experience in all these things and leading these things and personally being called to what seems like it's not like properly rooted in the Mass. Mm-hmm. So talk about a little bit like what is the relationship between like song and prayer? Mm. And I mean, that's like a really sort of abstract question, but I think it's a question that both Rafa and I are like really like jonesing for you to sink your teeth into.
Well, I think what something that is important to always remember is like we're participants in the Mass. Mm. You know, when you go to a Protestant service, it's very much for your personal hunger for Christ, for the Word. And there isn't your participation portion because there is no Mass.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's, and in some churches they do have liturgy much more so than, you know, other churches, but it's a different setting. It's a different purpose. Mm-hmm.
It's purely receptive. It sounds like someone's going to preach the word. Mm-hmm. They're going to like give me a message and then I'm going to receive it. And then I'm going to go wherever else and do Bible study. But
at the service.
It's just receptive.
It's just receptive in nature.
Yeah.
So we have to look very specifically like there at that difference. Mm-hmm. With praise and worship, I mean, there are very few times within the Mass that it could be used appropriately. I mean, you're not going to be going into spontaneous worship during Mass. I mean, you're just not, and that's okay.
You ought not.
You ought not. Yeah. That's right. I mean, you ought not. Because it's not appropriate. But there are times in community where, whether it's, you know, adoration or if it's a worship night at your parish or whatever, that it would be completely appropriate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be very intentional and very specific about tying in specific songs to the liturgy. And I think someone that did it really, there's my friend Chris Nolan, who just started Worship Now, which is a worship, praise and worship hymnal for churches. Mm-hmm. And they have gone through, I mean, over and over and over, specific praise and worship songs that can be connected to the liturgy, which is phenomenal because Catholics will not use screens. You know?
Well, some will, but
some will.
There are two Rubik screens in my
some will not. And so it gives the churches that are incredibly against the use of screens and worship aids, a hymnal that is liturgically based and liturgically sound that has been approved by the bishops for, you know, contemporary masses. Mm-hmm. What bothers me is that there's almost like an either or, you know, well, we either are doing this or we are either doing this. No matter if one or the other, they're both liturgically sound. They're both liturgically appropriate. And it's like,
what do you mean?
For instance, if someone wants to use a praise and worship song that fits within the liturgy well, that connects to the readings, and is more contemporary, let's give it a 1994 Hillsong. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
And they're highly, highly offended that you would even suggest that.
So you're contrasting the 5 p.m. Mass with the 9 a.m. Mass. Let's just, you know, at name your parish.
Name the parish. there's always like this, well, oh my gosh, you can't do that. Well, you can't do this. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, we can do, we're the cat. Okay. We have beautiful, beautiful liturgical guidelines, and the Archdiocese works very, very, you know, Chris Labadie. I mean, they work so hard at making sure that the liturgy is done so, so well. Mm-hmm. And it is. And the beauty behind our church is that it is integrated culturally. It is integrated through different music. It's integrated through all of these different ways that are beautiful, mm-hmm. that are beautiful, and that the Holy Spirit works through, I mean, and just weaves everything together. And I think I was talking about this today about, you know, the culture of offense, like everyone is so offended about everything. Yeah. Like, I am offended, you know? I think it's, we just gotta step back a little bit. I personally love High Mass. Like, I am a charismatic worship leader. Mm-hmm. I love going to a traditional High Mass because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. You know, you, there's like, you can't deny that, you know? So I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think ideally, like right now we
come
have,
here, like, it's like, just give me a hug.
Yeah, no, no. And I'm going to, this is like the verbal hug. All right. Yeah. Yeah. We have the, like 5 PM, like St. Thomas More Hillsong. Right. And then we'll have the, you know, 9 and 11, the 11 o'clock, like traditional, there's the whole choir and the organs played.
Yeah.
9 o'clock. And it's like kind of a mix between the two. I want like another one, like a 7 p.m., but it's like Extraordinary right. Form High Mass.
Yeah, yeah.
Like with the, like all of the, you know, yeah. liturgical, you know,
yeah.
vestments and just like top to bottom. I think there's one thing we're missing. And we had talked about this before. How
we're missing the altar boys swinging the incense. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Whip it around.
But like basketball sized thurbles. And like, you know, yes. I'm talking like there is no such thing as too much incense.
There isn't.
But I mean, seriously, I think this is one thing that like, I've come to a place since we started this podcast and over the last like 2 years where I think one of the things that our average parish is missing is that experience of an extraordinary form mass that is alongside everything else. And it's an option, and not that we should like, you know, have this buffet where we can like take whatever we want because I'm going to pick this and not that, but it's the way the church has worshiped for so long. And there's a kind of undeniable beauty in the thing. And there's a liturgical richness that we've just lost. And I think we would benefit top to bottom from having something like that present. And
definitely. And I think what would also be beneficial with that is like a teaching mass that where,
what do you mean?
Where I've seen this done, I've seen it done in actually contemporary services where the priest will stop the mass and he will explain to the parish. Usually it's done with kids, like at Catholic schools.
Like not the homily or?
I'm talking like every step of the way, like, you know, explaining every part of Liturgy of the Eucharist, Liturgy of the Word, why it's happening, why the priest is saying, why he's saying it.
Is it like disruptive to it, or were you like, finally someone's explained to me what's going on?
Well, it was, it will say, you know, 11 a.m. teaching mass. Mm. So people know ahead of time, like, okay, this is going to be like a 2.5 hour, you know.
Yeah.
But then they understand, and then they see their pastor leading.
Uh-huh.
And teaching well.
Yeah.
And explaining, okay, this is why we do what we do.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I'm not telling you to kneel because I want your knees to hurt.
Yeah.
Like, right.
You know.
We could probably all use a reminder for why.
Yeah.
The things we do, like the reason why our bodies are so intensely participatory in the mass, like all that stuff has meaning and significance.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And I think our oldest was there when they did that, and I do remember him being very, he's like, oh, that was really cool.
Wow, you know? You're like, oh, I failed as a parent. Just now learning what's been going on.
Right. Like, oh, good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Butte Ever New Podcast, your podcast for conversations on church architecture and the reinvigoration of beauty in the church.
You just finished listening to one part of a longer multi-episode conversation. Check out the podcast feed for the rest of this conversation and share it with your friends and family.